Welcome, Truth Seekers, on behalf of the Great Awakening Report, to this week's Truth Seekers Weekly Briefing Mainstream Media Review for August 14th, 2026.
Glad to be here.
And, you know, if you are listening to this right now, I really want to take a second to acknowledge the reality of what you're likely experiencing day to day.
Right.
Because you wake up, you check your phone, and you are just hit with this absolute avalanche of disconnected, heavy headlines.
Oh, yeah. Every single morning.
Yeah. We are looking at deep economic uncertainty, major global instability, and just this pervasive, lingering distrust in the very institutions that are supposed to guide us.
It's a lot.
It feels incredibly chaotic. Like, it feels like standing in the middle of a massive control room where 100 different alarms are flashing red at the same time.
And nobody knows which one to turn off first.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, it is entirely understandable to feel overwhelmed by that. When you only look at isolated headlines, the world just looks like, well, a continuous series of random terrifying emergencies.
Yeah, just panic after panic.
Right. But true clarity doesn't come from consuming more content. And it certainly isn't born out of emotional panic. Clarity comes from disciplined observation.
Okay, let's unpack this, because our mission for today's deep dive is exactly that. We are cutting through the fear and the noise.
We have to train ourselves to stop reacting to the noise and really start identifying the signals.
The structural shifts.
Exactly, the actual structural shifts happening beneath the surface. Because once you find a signal, you can follow that thread to see how it connects across completely different sectors of society.
Right. And we have a pretty dense stack of mainstream news stories from the past 2 weeks, and we are going to connect those dots for you. We're tracking the systemic changes across economics, technology, and society that are actually driving these headlines.
It's about the patterns.
Yes. So let's start with what is arguably the foundation of any functioning society: human trust.
The big one.
Specifically, how we trust authority. And how recent disclosures are just fundamentally rewriting that contract.
We're seeing this play out in real time, especially with the recent releases surrounding our public health institutions. I mean, the raw data that is coming to light is actively reshaping the historical record of the past few years.
Yeah, I want to dive straight into the Fauci diaries and text messages.
It's a massive story right now.
It really is. Oh. This story has moved entirely out of, you know, obscure congressional subcommittees. It is now dominating the center of the national media spotlight.
Right.
We are looking at the release of over 1,100 pages of Dr. Anthony Fauci's personal pandemic-era diary entries.
That's a huge volume of information.
And beyond that, there is this massive data dump, like 34,000 text messages and 522 voicemails.
Wow.
Yeah, obtained by Senators Rand Paul and Ron Johnson. And there's one specific thread from January 2021 that really caught my eye.
Which one is that?
It's a direct conversation between Dr. Fauci, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky, and Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. They are internally discussing the theoretical risks of COVID vaccination during early pregnancy. And in the tests, they explicitly note that out of 10,000 observed cases of vaccinated pregnant women, they hadn't seen any safety signals.
Right. Yeah.
Yet they were still heavily debating the theoretical risks behind closed doors.
Well, it is crucial that we look at this through a lens of strict neutrality.
Of course.
I mean, the lasting value of these documents has nothing to do with scoring political points or, you know, taking sides in a partisan debate.
No.
These are primary source materials. They give the public this really rare opportunity to compare the internal behind-the-scenes scientific uncertainty with the very definitive, finalized public messaging that was being broadcast on television at the exact same time.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's a real-time audit of how rapidly shifting data gets translated into rigid policy during a global crisis.
It feels like we are finally getting the director's cut of a movie that we all just lived through.
That's a great way to put it.
Right. Like, we're seeing the messy behind-the-scenes debates,
yeah,
the alternate theories they considered, all the raw footage before the polished soundtrack was added.
Exactly.
But wait, hold on. I have to push back a little here.
Yeah.
If we have 10,000 observed cases with no safety signals, yet they were still heavily debating the risks internally, how does that gap between private uncertainty and public certainty actually impact how policy is made today?
Well, it changes everything.
Because I'm looking at the current administration's restructuring of the federal childhood immunization policy, and it seems like a direct reaction to this audit.
It absolutely is.
They're suddenly narrowing the universal core schedule down to just 11 diseases.
Right.
And they are moving a whole host of other vaccines into this new category called shared clinical decision making.
Right.
I hear the argument for giving people more choice.
Yeah.
But doesn't this just create utter chaos?
It certainly creates complexity.
Yeah. If I am a parent trying to navigate this, I don't want a fragmented system where every state and every doctor has a totally different protocol. I just want to know who is actually right.
Yeah. What's fascinating here is that your skepticism highlights the exact structural shift we are tracking.
Okay.
This is so much larger than a debate about specific vaccines. This is a massive societal level audit of expertise itself.
The audit of expertise. Wow.
Yeah. We are watching the post-COVID restructuring of American public health happen right in front of us. The fundamental locus of authority is shifting.
Shifting where?
It's moving rapidly away from centralized federal mandates and being pushed down to individual, physician, and state-level discretion.
So the burden of choice is just being handed back to the individual.
Precisely. And whether that decentralization ultimately restores public trust through radical transparency, or whether it completely fragments our baseline public health standards into, you know, 50 different realities, that is the defining test we are going to be measuring over the next decade.
The traditional rules of centralized authority are actively breaking down.
Exactly. But it's not just happening in public health.
Right. Because if health authority is decentralizing, we have to look at the economy. Our economy is experiencing a very similar breakdown of its traditional rules.
Yes, the core assumptions are fracturing.
Because for generations, we've operated on a pretty basic assumption. If a company does well, it hires more people.
Right.
If the economy grows, jobs grow. But right now, those two things are completely decoupling.
We are entering an economic paradigm that defies conventional textbooks. The historic relationship between employment and economic output is just, it's fracturing.
Just look at the July employment report.
Yeah.
We actually saw a contraction in payrolls.
Yeah, hiring momentum is visibly deteriorating across multiple sectors.
But if you look at corporate earnings, and if you look at Wall Street, they are absolutely booming.
Breaking records.
The money is flowing, but it's not flowing to paychecks. There is this massive fire hose of capital being directed entirely into AI data centers, robotics, and next-generation computing infrastructure.
It's a capital reallocation on a historic scale.
It's like we've swapped out the engine of the economy. For the last 100 years, the engine ran on human labor. If a company wanted to grow its output by 10%, it generally had to hire 10% more people.
Right. That was the drive belt.
But artificial intelligence severs the drive belt. Now, a corporation can scale its growth by 50% while actually shrinking its workforce. The gears of corporate profit and human employment are simply no longer connected.
That mechanism is what economists are starting to call the jobless boom.
The jobless boom.
Yeah. And the profound societal threat isn't necessarily a dystopian scenario where all human work disappears overnight. The real threat is the sheer velocity of this change.
How fast it's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Generative AI and autonomous systems are allowing output to expand almost instantly. But our societal institutions, how we tax, how we fund retirement, how we distribute healthcare, they are entirely predicated on the assumption of mass human employment.
Right. The whole system is built on jobs.
And this technological shift is violently colliding with a second massive structural thread we're tracking, the great refinancing squeeze.
Oh, man. The era of cheap money is completely over.
It's gone.
We are seeing elevated treasury yields that just refuse to drop.
Yeah.
But how does that actually hit the listener's wallet? Like, how does a high yield on a government bond translate to a financial squeeze for a regular family?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to understand how the cost of money works.
Okay, walk us through it.
When the United States government, which is considered the safest borrower on the planet, has to offer a 5% interest rate just to convince people to buy its debt, that sets the absolute baseline floor for global finance.
Right.
If the risk-free government rate is 5%, a bank is certainly not going to lend money to a corporation or, you know, give you a mortgage for 3%.
They'd lose money.
Exactly. They were going to charge 7% or 8% to account for the risk. So when the government struggles to finance its deficits and yields stay high, that financial pressure trickles down instantly.
It hits everything.
It makes corporate borrowing incredibly expensive. It freezes commercial real estate. And ultimately, it makes your credit card debt and your mortgage devastatingly expensive. The financial stress is systematically transferred from a government's balance sheet directly onto the shoulders of American households.
Which explains exactly what we are seeing in real estate right now.
Yeah.
Let's look at the Boston housing market as a prime example of this squeeze.
It's a perfect microcosm.
We are seeing inventory slowly creeping up, right? Houses are sitting on the market for 45 to 60 days instead of a single weekend.
Yeah.
And there are a noticeable increase in price reductions. But it's not a full-blown crash because housing supply is still historically constrained. Prices aren't plummeting. It's just a suffocating squeeze.
Exactly.
But this brings me to a massive contradiction.
What's that?
If we are entering this AI-driven jobless boom where human labor is devalued and wages are stagnating, how on earth is an average family supposed to afford a home at these massive 2026 mortgage rates?
Well, that is the defining economic paradox of this decade.
It's impossible math.
You have two forces pulling the middle class in completely opposite directions. Technological deflation is threatening their income, while the high cost of capital is inflating their living expenses.
And our institutions are just totally unprepared for this.
They are simply not prepared to bridge that gap. The transition is arriving much faster than the policy solutions.
So we have artificial intelligence operating in the digital realm, disrupting labor, and we have high interest rates squeezing consumer credit. Those can feel a bit abstract, you know, almost invisible.
Sure.
But our global economy isn't just code and debt. It runs on physical, real-world infrastructure. It requires ships and fuel and geography.
Yes.
And while the digital world seems limitless, the physical world is currently hitting severe geographic bottlenecks, specifically in the Middle East.
We often forget that geography still dictates the digital age. I mean, everything you order online eventually has to move through a physical space.
Right. And we are tracking this highly interconnected boiling pressure zone right now between Gaza, Iran, and Israel. And sitting right in the geographical center of this tension is the Strait of Hormuz.
A very critical area.
For those who aren't familiar, this is an incredibly narrow maritime corridor. At its narrowest point, it's only about 21 miles wide.
It's tiny.
Yet roughly one-fifth of all global petroleum liquids pass through this specific stretch of water.
It is arguably the single most critical physical vulnerability in the global energy supply chain.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because of the geopolitical stress on that specific choke point, combined with already tight global refining capacities, the United States is currently facing a looming national jet fuel shortage warning.
And the timeline on this is immediate.
It is. The warning is set for exactly 1 month from today, September 14th, 2026.
Wow.
The International Air Transport Association, IATA, just released projections indicating that jet fuel could spike to $152 per barrel.
That's a massive jump.
To put that in perspective, that is almost 70% higher than the baseline prices we saw in 2025. And the airlines aren't just waiting around to see what happens either.
No, they're reacting now.
American Airlines and United Airlines are already preemptively cutting flight routes for late August and September. And the West Coast of the United States is uniquely vulnerable here because their aviation infrastructure relies heavily on fuel imports from Asia, which traverse these complicated global shipping lanes.
Right.
But I need to understand the practical reality of this warning. When they say shortage, are we looking at a literal physical scenario where planes are grounded on the tarmac in Seattle and Los Angeles because the tanks are dry?
Or is it just a price shock?
Yeah. Is this just going to manifest as a massive price shock that makes airline tickets completely unaffordable for a normal family?
Well, it is vital to separate the current reality from the worst case scenario.
Okay.
Right now, as we analyze the data today, it is a severely stressed market resulting in a significant price shock.
Nope.
The airlines are trimming their schedules because operating certain routes at these fuel prices simply bleeds cash. It's an economic decision.
Makes sense.
However, the critical signal we are tracking for mid-September is whether this market stress cascades into an actual physical infrastructure event.
Like, do the regional fuel reserves actually deplete?
Exactly. The domino effect you need to recognize here is that a conflict in the Persian Gulf doesn't just stay on your television screen.
Right.
It is a direct economic transmission mechanism. A localized geopolitical flare-up instantly inflates logistics costs, overnight shipping rates, and basic consumer prices right here in the United States.
It's an incredible chain reaction. Like a drone strike thousands of miles away means your overnight shipping costs double and your family vacation gets canceled because the flight is too expensive.
It is completely entangled.
But man-made geopolitical conflicts aren't the only forces stressing these physical choke points.
No, they are not.
The Earth itself is actively testing our infrastructure.
The environmental variables are proving to be just as disruptive as the geopolitical ones, particularly when we look at the current situation in Europe.
The extreme heat and drought blanketing Europe right now is staggering. But this isn't just a story about temperature records, right? It is a profound infrastructure failure.
A massive cascade.
Let's walk through how this cascade actually happens. It starts with the weather, the extreme heat.
Right.
That directly impacts the water. The rivers dry up. That impacts energy, which hits food, which hits infrastructure, and finally brings the economy to a halt.
It's all connected.
Take the major European rivers, like the Rhine. The water levels are running so low that commercial barges literally cannot carry a full load of cargo without scraping the bottom.
It gets stuck.
They have to run at a fraction of their capacity, which bottlenecks the delivery of coal and industrial chemicals.
But there's an even bigger issue.
Yeah, the mechanism that really blew my mind is how this affects nuclear power. The low water levels are actively threatening the cooling systems for thermal and nuclear power stations across France and Germany.
It is a textbook demonstration of the water-energy nexus.
The water-energy nexus.
Yes. Modern civilization has designed incredibly efficient, highly optimized systems, but that optimization creates deep, hidden vulnerabilities.
How so?
While a nuclear power plant requires a massive continuous flow of cool river water to operate safely.
Right, to cool the reactors.
Exactly. When a river's water level drops, or when the water itself becomes too warm from the ambient heat wave, the plant cannot legally or physically cool its reactors.
Wow.
You have to throttle down the power output or shut the plant off entirely, so you don't just lose the ability to transport goods on the river.
You simultaneously lose the electrical generation required to run the air conditioners that are keeping people alive during the heat wave.
Exactly. A single localized climate variable rapidly propagates through the entire industrial supply chain.
It sounds incredibly fragile when you lay it out like that. But I want to contrast that vulnerability with something that actually gives me a lot of hope.
What's that?
The global food system.
Yes.
Because despite everything we just talked about, the severe geopolitical risks in the Black Sea, the ongoing shipping attacks in the Red Sea, the extreme drought in Europe, the global food system has not collapsed.
It hasn't.
It is showing an astonishing level of resilience. Through advancements in crop genetics, incredibly diversified geographic production, and just the logistical brilliance of rapidly shifting global trade routes, the food supply chain is actively adapting to these shocks in real time.
And that adaptation is just as important to observe as the failures. It requires a different kind of analytical focus.
So what does this all mean? When I look at all these systems together, it's like watching a global immune system at work.
I like that analogy.
The European heat waves, the Red Sea conflicts, the interest rate shocks, those are the viruses attacking the body. And our physical infrastructure is running a high fever. You know, it is sweating it out. Airlines are cutting routes, barges are running half empty.
But the patient is surviving.
Exactly. The fact that global food production hasn't just flatlined shows that our societal immune system is incredibly robust. It can take a hit.
This raises an important question, and it really anchors the core philosophy of why we do these reviews.
Go ahead.
We have to train ourselves to track resilience with the exact same rigor that we use to track vulnerability.
That's a great point.
A warning signal on a dashboard does not guarantee a predetermined systemic collapse. Severe stress does not equal failure. What the global food system is proving right now is that a complex adaptive network can bend incredibly far before it actually breaks.
Right.
When a shipping route in the Red Sea is blocked, algorithms route ships around Africa. When a crop yield fails in one hemisphere, strategic reserves and alternative yields are pulled from another. The system routes around the damage.
That is a deeply empowering way to view the world. And I think it brings us to a really grounded place to wrap up today's deep dive.
Absolutely.
Because the entire purpose of taking this stack of news from auditing the Fauci texts, to unpacking the mechanics of the AI jobless boon, to the Strait of Hormuz, to the European water energy nexus, is to see the architecture behind the headlines.
Right. When you understand the actual mechanisms at play, it changes everything.
It replaces panic with perspective.
Exactly. When you deeply understand that an AI server farm in California is directly connected to the Boston housing market through the cost of treasury yields, or how a warm river in France dictates energy policy, you stop reacting to every single breaking news alert out of fear.
You can take a breath.
You step back. True personal sovereignty comes from maintaining that centered, observant mindset.
The goal isn't to know everything.
No, the goal of this exercise isn't to memorize every data point in the universe. The goal is to see the patterns clearly so you can recognize the direction the world is moving long before it becomes obvious to the crowd.
I love that framing. The goal is to see clearly. But I want to leave you, the listener, with one final provocative thought to mull over as you navigate the rest of your week.
Always good to leave them thinking.
We started this deep dive talking about the breakdown of old diagnostic models and the messy renegotiation of trust in our health institutions. And we've seen how all of our global systems, from food shipping to the AI grid to Middle Eastern choke points, are becoming increasingly entangled and deeply interdependent.
They are.
So if human adaptation and technological advancement are accelerating this rapidly, well, what happens when that adaptation fundamentally outpaces the very institutions that were built to govern us?
That's the big question.
When the technology moves faster than the policy and the economy completely decouples from the worker, are we simply witnessing the chaotic collapse of old, broken systems? Or are we actually sitting in the front row for the messy, rapid birth of an entirely new global operating system?
Something to chew on.
Definitely something to chew on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive, Truth Seekers. Stay observant, keep your eyes open, and we'll see you next time.